Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Show Talk with Angela Butler. This evening, the show topic is about the Black CNN camerawoman Patricia Carroll. Carroll had peanuts thrown at her by two white GOP attendees and was told, "This is how we feed our animals." This happened at the Tampa, Florida Republican Convention. Rush Triphrase, strategist for presidential candidate Rick Romney, had this to say: "We find it absolutely deplorable. We condemn it the highest possible way. That behavior is reprehensible." My question this evening is, how far have we really come as Black Americans? Also on the show tonight is Mario Steffens, who is a fellow Blog Talk Radio host. How are you this afternoon, Mario?
I'm doing good, Angela, and how about yourself?
I'm doing okay, doing good. I know by now you've heard about this.
Yes, I have heard about it. And I guess, you know, for me, when things of this nature happen, I'm not surprised that white folks, I am surprised at the response that Black people have towards it. That we are still blinded by it, and we, you know, we still live in that bubble of equality and justice, and not having any concept or definition of it for ourselves. So we always have to go with what their definition is.
Okay, I have to wonder though. Black people seem, a lot of Black people seem, don't seem, well, to be shocked by this. You're one of them that doesn't seem to be shocked, and I'm not shocked by it. But this is 2012.
And what
2012. And we do have a Black American president. Do you believe that things will ever change? I mean, you know, they're called, they're saying, this is how we feed our animals, they're throwing peanuts at her. And, you know, it's bad.
Well, the one thing that having a Black president should have done or should be doing for us as a people is it should be waking us up. We should understand, number one, all of the, you know, we have congressmen and senators that point their fingers in the president's face. We have, you know, congressmen and senators that blurt out, "Shut up," and "idiot" and things like that when the president is speaking. We have, you know, all the Rush Limbaughs and all of them, you know, saying he's trying to give reparations to Black people, particularly when they talk about the health care issue. And if you notice now, when they talk about health care, they have a white person face on there. They call it affordable health care. If they have a Black person's face on it, they call it Obamacare. All of the blatant disrespect for not only President Obama, but the office that he holds, it's not just about him. They're not just disrespecting him. They're saying their feelings toward us as an entire race of people. And we refuse to hear it. We still want to kumbaya, and we still want to, you know, peace, equality, and justice. And, you know, when you buy someone else's definition and you don't define it for yourself, you don't use your own resolve to answer that. You don't bring it down to the specifics of what you need as a people, as a race, as a culture. And therefore, you are just given blanket answers and blanket definitions. And, you know, that's just the way it is. And, you know,
it's just the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, your question, there's two things to your question. One is change. Any change that happens in anywhere, it happens from the inside out. As an individual, if you make a change, it happens from the inside out. As a business, as a family, as a community, as a country, as a you know, whatever the case is, it happens from the inside out. The problem, it exists because we are afraid to look inside because we don't like what we see. We've got to learn to look inside and define it. And the other thing is, have we come as far as we think we've come or as far as we should have come? The answer is a resounding no, because we've been asleep at the wheel. And right now, it's time to either wake up and drive the car or crash and burn.
Yes, because there are more Black Americans in prison than there should be.
Well, Angela, we don't answer that. You know, we have to stop being a people that respond to things. We have to be a people that takes action, and you can't take action until you know who you are, until you develop who you are, and begin to give from that place. You know, a lot of Black people today. I'm not going to say most, but I'm saying a lot of Black people today do not want to say they're Black. Number one. Number two, go into a room of Black people and start talking about Black this and Black that, and watch the faces and the body language of the people. They get embarrassed. They get ashamed. They get just scrunching up, their faces get to twisting up, and so on and so forth. They get to looking around to see who's listening, and so on and so forth. You know, we've become ashamed of Black, and that was done intentionally. Now, when you talk about Blacks in prison, where does that start at? They start testing kids, males, in the third grade to see which ones, to determine how many prison beds they're going to build, because they know by your third grade math and reading scores what your future is going to be like.
They also label kids in school and start them off by giving them little records.
But see, that's
in elementary school, little things like going to the principal office, and it builds up to bigger things.
See, and you're right on point with that, Angela, because we talk a lot about we got to protect our children and we got to save our children, and it's all reactionary. We're reacting to what the system has created, when we should be taking action. And like you were talking about, the second part of that is the discipline that happens in school systems is the one place that has been held, that racism has been able to be held so sacred, other than in churches, because, you know, churches are still the most segregated places in America. But our kids, white children who commit the same offenses as Black children, do not get the same disciplinary action. You know,
that's the same way in the criminal justice system.
Yes, but the school system is a picture of it, because the school system is where they start preparing these kids to go to the prison. So if we're going to take some action to save our children, we need to be finding ways to get into the school system to understand and to prove that, number one, white children are getting a pass and a slap on the wrist for the same offenses that Black children are getting suspended, expelled, and kicked out of school for. And
yes,
that's where we need to begin. We send our kids to school, and a lot of these young mothers and young fathers send their kids to school for the school to educate and raise their kids, and not realizing they're educating your little Black child to go to prison. And you're not protecting your child because you're not in there fighting for your child or other children like your child when they're being disciplined unfairly. And your children know that. So your children go to school knowing that they're on their own and they're fending for themselves. And they don't have enough experience. They don't have enough knowledge. They don't have enough anything to defend themselves. And they come home, and they can't say anything to mom and dad, because mom and dad is like, you're in school to learn. You ain't in school to make friends. You ain't in school to cut up. They're not hearing them. You can't listen. But the fact is that our children are being treated horribly, particularly in discipline, in school systems. And if they treat them horribly in discipline, imagine how they're treating them when they're really trying to teach them. How can somebody that wants to be unfair to your child teach your child correctly?
That's right. Back to Ms. Patricia Cara, the CNN in Black Camerawoman. She had this to say. She said, you come to places like this, you can count the black people on your hand. They see us doing things they don't think I should do. She said, racism is a global issue. An incident could have happened on the street corner at the Democratic Convention.
She's absolutely right. However, that's a multifaceted issue for a number of reasons. Number one, when you go back through our history as black people in this country, when we first started getting into the Republican Party and things like Independent Party and all this other stuff, we didn't do it because we were really a Republican. We did it because we needed to have black representation at these places to understand what they're saying and doing so that we know how to counter it and that we always have some type of representation no matter what's going on. However, that message got distorted. As time went on, a lot of us took it to say, well, we're black, we can be anything, we can do anything, we can be anybody. And the message got mixed, so people were doing it thinking it's justice and equality and whatever, and forget what the real purpose was. So those who, in our old school days, who did that, they couldn't come out and say, look, you're doing it for a different reason or a different purpose, or you got it mixed up. This is the way it's really supposed to be. Because if they did it behind closed doors, that person more than likely was an Oreo or Uncle Tom or Sambo or sellout, and they would sell that person out. And that's the end of that person and the effectiveness that they could have had in what they were doing. So they couldn't come out publicly and say it, because if they come out publicly and say it, anytime a black person says something for black people, that means he's against everybody else. So they couldn't do that. So as the message got mixed, now we have everybody intermixing, thinking that that was what the purpose was, just like Martin Luther King. Everybody thought his purpose was equality. No, his purpose was equal access. He wanted the same thing in our community that they have in white communities. He didn't want us to be going to the white community, but if we did go, it was our privilege, it was our choice, not because our community lacked something, but because that's just where we chose to be. But when and that message got mixed up.
Do you think that when integration was forced on white people, that was a mistake?
Integration was probably the worst thing to happen to black people, number one. Number two, integration was not doled out completely. We were never really completely integrated. And then look at how they did integration. When they started with the busing, they didn't bus kids. They didn't have kids go to the white school in their neighborhood, not the black kids. The black kids were bused to schools all the way across town when they had a school that they could walk to 5 minutes from their house.
Yes.
Okay. So.
All right.
Integration is like a two-faced devil. It really is. No matter which way you turn around, it really is a devil. People look at it as progress, but I just don't agree with it. When I grew up in the hood, in the ghetto, in the projects, in the inner city, I knew all the doctors, I knew all the lawyers, I knew all the business owners, I knew all the insurance agents, I knew those who owned the gas stations, the grocery stores, the corner stores, the junkyards, the restaurants, all of that. Today, when you go into the inner city, the hood, the ghetto, whatever you want to call it, it's only a remnant of what I grew up in. It does not represent the hood. It represents what we left in the hood. It represents what we deserted. It represents the land that we didn't want, the buildings we didn't want, the houses we didn't want, the schools we didn't want. It represents today what we've deserted.
So do you think that if more I'm not trying to judge anybody here, but if more black people, when they made it, had stayed in the hood, that it would be what they call the hood now, it would be
Man,
better
if
off.
If that had happened, Angela, white people would not be flocking to downtown. White people would not be flocking to suburbs. They would be breaking their neck, selling their mama and granddaddy, killing their cats and dogs, putting their kids on drugs, trying to get to the oasis that the inner city would have been.
Okay. The Republicans issued an apology, but
Do you really believe that's real? Come on. Think of what you're saying. The politicians, the Republican politicians, issued an apology. Have they found the people who were guilty of the crime? Because it was a crime. It was number one. It was hate. It was a hate crime.
Okay? It was a hate crime against Patricia Carey.
Exactly. That is a felony offense that is not being prosecuted. So apologize to me all you want when you ain't doing nothing. When you do something, then I can accept your apology because your actions speak louder than your words. You can say all you want to out your mouth. You can talk out the side of your neck. It don't mean crap to me. When you do something about it, then we got something to talk about.
Okay. All right. We're going to go to break. We have with us on the fellow Blog Talk radio host Mario Steffens. We're talking about Miss Patricia Carroll, among other things.
And I wish I was able to have been there with Patricia Carroll when that happened, because it would be some prosecution going on, even if I was the only one getting prosecuted.
Oh, okay. All right. Let's take a break off that one, okay?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. Well, my commercials, I'm having technical difficulty again tonight. I don't know what's going on.
I'm sorry.
Try again. Sorry, listeners.
A special event can be very challenging and stressful at times. Our staff of professionals organizes your event down to every last detail, no matter what size. Our creativity and attention to detail turns your ordinary party into an extraordinary event. And Decline provides world-class service. We coordinate quality events. We can provide travel arrangements, accommodations, event sites, caterers, courts, photographers, transportation, hairstylist and makeup artists, daily itineraries, and pre-event information such as detailed maps, save-the-date cards, and invitations. Being a custom event planner means that we cater to you. It is our job to find the best possible way to present your event. We have been referred to as Dreamweaver. At risk youth is defined by statute as a child under the age of 18 who meets at least one of the following three requirements: is absent from home for at least 72 consecutive hours without parental consent, or is beyond parental control such that his/her behavior endangers the health, safety, or welfare of the child or any other person, has a substance abuse problem for which there are no pending criminal charges relating to the substance abuse. At Camp Penny, we have found that at-risk youth struggle with complex issues and scenarios that are brought on by peers, mentors, family members, and difficult social environments. Camp Penny understands the increased complexity of today's at-risk youth, hands-on parents. Camp Penny works with nonprofits and federal agencies to find solutions. Today's youth are exposed to a variety of negatives, making them more at risk to injury, academic failure, and poor health. Teens who are likely to be more at risk are usually those that do not have a strong support system at home and in the community, as well as teens who are not coping well with the different challenges that they are facing. So what sorts of programs will Camp Penny have? Camp Penny will provide outdoor activities as a main feature of the camp. There is no sitting around getting bored at Camp Penny. The girls will eat a well-balanced and healthy diet, then get outside for some well-planned and highly beneficial programs. Just the Camp Penny location is a real boost for our children. The beauty of nature may not have previously registered with many city-bound kids. Out in the wilderness, the teens get to commune with nature, observe the wildlife, and tackle challenging physical tasks that will build their self-confidence and their muscles. If you would like to help or become a volunteer of the Camp Penny project, please contact us at client@camppenny.org. Let's save our daughters.
All right, listeners. You're listening to your show talk with Angela Butler. We have on the show this evening, Mario Steffens, who is a fellow Blog Talk radio host. The question tonight is, my question this evening is, how far have we really come as Black Americans? Mario.
Yes.
You were saying that prosecution should have went on. Prosecution should have went on. Charges should have been brought. But Ms. Carroll herself would have had to brought the charges, so she chose not to.
Well, no. A hate crime is a felony. It's a federal offense. And it does not have to be brought on by the individual, the state, the
it
city,
does.
Or the county
okay.
government.
Thank you for correcting me.
You know, so, you know, it's like a rape or murder case. The person doesn't have to press charges. If they don't press charges, the prosecutor of that city or state can take over that case and prosecute it themselves.
Yeah, they shouted at her, "This is how we feed our animals." And that must have been very degrading and humiliating as a Black woman. But it's like she said, I can't change these people's hearts and minds. No, it don't feel good, but I know who I am. I am a proud Black woman. A lot of people are upset. This should be a wake-up call to Black people. People were living in euphoria for a while. People think we've gone further than we have.
My question is this: why would you expect any different? You're in Florida, number one, okay. Number two, what's recently been happening in Florida with the stand your ground laws? You got the Trayvon Martin incident. Then
yes.
you got Melissa. I forget her last name, but here's a woman who stand your ground law was written for, a Black woman who was threatened by her children's father, and all she did was take her gun and fire a shot in the air. She didn't kill anybody. She didn't harm anybody. She didn't anything. She just fired a warning shot in the air with a gun that was legally registered to her in her name, okay? Yet this woman is in prison right now. She's in prison serving a 20-year sentence. And
so she's been gun in there, yes. I know about it because I'm in Florida.
Okay, see, and you have a Zimmerman who is running on the streets. So, you go back to, you look at the Bush campaign and all of the crooked stuff that Jeb Bush and George Bush and their father and brothers and all of them did. They made
with
that
the
possible.
Chad.
With
the Chad.
They made all that possible through Florida. You know, how can you go someplace and not know where you at? If you don't know your atmosphere, you ought not be there. I'm no longer apologetic or sympathetic with our people who put on blinders to the reality of the life that we live here in this country, particularly when the last 4 years have shown us that racism has just been underground, and it now it's okay to be racist. It's cool
it's
to be racist.
It's
you know,
place.
If you can almost taste it. Exactly. If you're not racist and you white, man, you ain't right. That's what the Republicans. That's what Rush Limbaugh and all them cats, that's what they're all about. And they're open with it. And the fact is, until we, as black people, accept and embrace our blackness with love, it's not going to change. An angry black person is just as bad as an apologetic black person, someone who apologizes for being black or is afraid of being black or don't want to announce their blackness. One who is an angry black person is just as bad, because if you can't love yourself, you'll never love anybody else. And you can't love yourself if you're angry all the time.
That's true. That is true.
You know, if you can't come to peace and terms with yourself, you'll never do it with anybody else. And for white folks, it's time for black people to stand up and say, this is who we are as a people. We're a loving people, but we love ourselves first. We're not going to love you more than we love ourselves. You know, we're a smart and intelligent people. We understand what's going on in our homes and our family and our community. We know the issues, and we're going to find a resolve. We're black people. We don't wait on you to do for us what we can do for ourselves. We do it ourselves first.
Yes.
Black people have to lead. We have to lead our own issues. When you go into a room, whether it's full of white racists, whether it's full of white liberals, whether it's full of white kumbaya, whatever it is, you ought to be able to walk in there as a black person so that they can say, oh, okay, this is what black people really talk like. This is what black people really act like, look like. Black people have character. Black people have beauty. Black people have sustenance. Black people have intelligence. Black people have culture. Black people, you know what I'm saying? This is what black people really are and have, but they haven't seen it because we haven't shown it to them.
Okay. All right, listeners, you're listening to Show Talk with Angela Butler. I'd like to know, with the Trayvon Martin case, the young man who was shot and killed by George Zimmerman.
That was murdered by George Zimmerman.
Yes, yes. Okay. All right. The man is in jail now, as far as I know.
And look, how long did it take to get him here?
It took a long time.
They also
got him for lying about his finances to the judge.
But even that, look at that. This man had people donate tens of thousands of dollars to him online.
It's like they rewarded him for killing a teenager.
Exactly. And you know what? You know what the Republicans and the white folks will say? They'll say, "Oh, that was the Ku Klux Klan that backed him. That was the Aryan Nation. That was the, you know, that was all the hate groups donate money." They're a lie. That was them crystal clean white folk that look like you and me, that got them big jobs and big offices and big houses, drive them fancy cars, wear them fancy clothes, take them trips to Europe, and back the Republican Party and all the other. And don't get me wrong, I'm not just down on the Republican Party, because we got racists and bigots in the Democratic Party and the Independent Party. The only one that's putting their face forward is the Tea Party. They're telling you who they are, and they say you can accept us or reject us, but this is who we are. They're the only ones telling the truth about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So they've changed the hoods for suits now.
Well, you know, in 1954, the Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan wrote a letter to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and told him that they were going to take off their hoods, they were going to cut their hair, they were going to put on suits and ties, and they were going to become the mayors, the governors, the presidents, the senators, the congressmen, the judges, the police chiefs, the attorneys. They were going to become the fire chiefs, the school board administrators. They were going to become all these folks. So when they did that, with us with our eyes closed, why do you think their system of things is so effective and ours is so ineffective?
I don't know the answer to everything. I'm going to let you answer that.
Well, that was kind of a rhetorical question.
Okay. All right.
none of us have all the answers. And that, you know, that in itself brings up another part of us as a people. We have as many answers.
What can we do as a people? What can we do as a people? Because even though it was peanuts and they called our animals, said this is how we feed our animals, worse has happened than that, much worse. That was a hate crime. That is a hate crime. But worse has happened. We have young teenage men being killed for walking around in the neighborhood and things. And it's not just one isolated incident. It happens all the time.
That has been happening in our community since we were brought over here on ships. That is not nothing new.
That thing
that says the same soup is just warmed over? That's all it is. It's the same soup, it's just warmed over. It just has a different face. It's taking on a different character. It's coming out of, you know, different wombs of different women. It's nothing different. And that's what we need to wake up and realize. We act like we're seeing something new. We ain't seeing nothing new.
You may have seen on CNN, there was a young man killed some years back, about four, maybe 5 years ago, named Martin Anderson from Panama City, Florida. He was, I think, 14 or 15 at a boot camp. Did you hear about that in Florida, Panama City, Florida?
Yeah.
None of
this is new. I've been seeing this since I was a baby, since I could open my eyes and recognize what I see. I've been seeing it. It's not new. And when we recognize that it is not new, we'll begin to find solutions to it. We'll be able to attack the demon, or we'll be able to attack the disease and stop crying about the symptoms. You know,
most people see Florida as nothing but beaches, but it's a very strong prison system here.
Man, it's Florida, Texas, Mississippi, Alabama. The South is still the South, and the North has been permeated, penetrated, and manipulated, to be a small scale of what they are. You know, I mean, just for example, when the economy is bad. And black folks say they can't find jobs. And white folks get mad every time a black person get a job because they think the jobs belong to them and this country belongs to them, and we don't have the rights they have, and we shouldn't be given those jobs. So what you have in job situations in corporate America and manufacturing and distribution and whatever, you have the whites close ranks, and they do everything they can to keep the administration from hiring too many blacks. They'll have a set number that they want, and the rest, they do everything to keep them out, whether they're setting them up, whether it's mistraining them, whether they're, you know, whatever it is, and they lock them out, and then they let the white folks in to get those jobs. Well, because black people are not the biggest employer of their own people, we don't have the opportunities to do that. You know, we don't have the opportunity to close ranks and lock anybody out. And that, again, is a part of our downfall. We can't be looking to the government. We can't be looking to the mass white corporations, to the institutions built by them, for them, designed to protect, enhance, and build them up, to do the same thing for us. We have to learn to do it for ourselves.
Yes.
And we got to stop saying, oh, we don't have the resources. Oh, we don't have – I'm sorry. When I watch a group of Mexicans, when I watch 10 or 12 Mexicans live in one house, and I'm not talking – no, this is not stereotypical talk. This is factual. Right across the street from me, I live on one corner, right on the next corner, there was at least 10 to 12 Mexicans living in this house, okay? They had the nice cars. I mean, they had cars, trucks, SUVs, whatever. They every weekend, you see, not even the weekend, every night, you see them, they go to the little corner drive-thru and buy all the beer they want, you know? See a black person, hey, you know where to get some weed, you know where to get some drugs, whatever. They can do that, and they go, and they go to work. Now, our people look at that and say, oh, we can't get the landscaping jobs, or we can't get the roofing jobs, or we can't get the painting jobs because the Mexicans do it cheaper. That's bull. I don't know one Mexican. I have not met one Mexican that gets paid less than $15 an hour, whether he's landscaping, roofing, painting, or whatever. Now, you got to realize how they do it. It's simple, it's banal. And I've tried to prove it to different people, and they still don't see it. I had a friend that thought he was taking advantage of me. He had this one-story level house that he wanted painted. And he wanted to pay me $400 to do it, $1,200 job. Okay, he figured he was being funny. I took the job just to prove a point to him. I painted the house in 8 hours, okay, which means I made $50 an hour. He paid me $50 an hour to paint a house that he thought he was getting over on.
Mm-hmm.
That's the economics of how Mexicans do it. If you take 10 people in to do an 8-hour job and you do it in 2 hours and you charge $400 for it and everybody else charges $800 for it, okay, yeah, on the outside it looks like they're doing it cheaper, but they're actually getting paid more because the person that charges $800, when he brings his crew in, they sit there and goof around and play and lollygag and take forever to get it done, not realizing the more time they spend in there, the less money they make.
Okay.
The Mexicans know the less time they spend in there, the more money they make, so the less they can charge.
All right.
It's simple economics.
So back to Miss Patricia Carroll. Is the CNN Black Camera, they had two people throw peanuts at her and said, this is how we feed the animals at the Republican
What has CNN done about it? She worked for them. She represented them. Where's their voice at? Who have they tried to talk?
I haven't read much or seen much on TV about this either. Have you noticed that the main media, it's a lot on the internet about it, but it's not a lot in mainstream media.
Well, there's no mainstream media covering the Trayvon Martin case. None. I was one of the first show people to cover or to talk about the Trayvon Martin case. Black
I
media
had some shows on Trayvon
was
Martin,
black,
too, but I believe you were the first also.
It was the black radio shows, it was the black TV shows, the black newspapers that brought Trayvon Martin to the forefront. If they hadn't done their work the way they were supposed to do it, the white media never would have covered it. Never. It would have never been heard of. And
they were just going to try to sweep it under the rug.
Exactly. But you know what I saw a few months ago? I saw a post on Facebook where they were trying to say that this one white man was responsible for the Trayvon Martin case being heard.
Oh.
If that was the biggest cracker I ever heard in my life. But that's how they do things. And we let them get away with it. We don't shut them down. We don't say that's bull. We don't tell them, hey, you know, go find you some other rabbit to skin.
Okay. All right. Well, Mario Steffens, tell the listeners the name of your show because I have running out of time here. We have about 5 minutes. Tell them the name of your show, the days it comes on, or when it will re-air or come back on or whatever. Say it.
Mario, this is Mario Steffens Sr., host and producer of the Most Steps Talk Show. It's on the Fertile Grounds Network where Marquise Johnson and Tara Johnson are the executive producers. We are in October. We'll be on Mondays from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I have been on hiatus, and I will come out of my hibernation in October.
Okay.
And we will be back on the air, but you can listen to any of the previous shows in the archives. They are still up and valuable and variable for all to see. And, Angela, I thank you for letting me be on here and having me as your guest. And I guess before I go, there was something that you mentioned to me before that we didn't mention, and I just wanted to say you wanted to talk about 9/11. And
yes,
I just wanted to give props to blackamericaweb.com because they have done a yeoman's job of bringing up the black faces that were lost in 9/11, the black families that have suffered the loss, and they've even gone the extra yard because they have a fund that they have been using to assist these families, to give these families some money and some help and other things. And that's what our news outlets and so on and should be about, you know, not forgetting. I mean, you know, we want to remember 9/11. We want to remember Pearl Harbor. We want to remember everything. But when it comes to the black face and the black issue, we want to say don't talk about it.
Okay, I'm going to ask you this question. This is off topic. I may shouldn't ask you, but I'm asked, what do you think of reparations?
About
reparations?
You know, that's not really something I've given a whole lot of thought to because, number one, if they gave us reparations, what are we going to do with them? Who are they going to give them to? Who's really going to be the overseer of them? Are they going to give it to each black individual? And with the mindsets that we have right now, all we're going to do is, now I'm not going to even look at that, but I do think we need to be acknowledged for what we've gone through and are going through in this country. I think we need to be remembered for the contributions that we have given, and I do think that we need to learn to come together. And coming together doesn't mean we're all doing the same thing. That's one of the things we got to realize. We're going to have different voices. Our situations are so complex, we're going to have so many different battlefields to fight on that we need to learn to come together and move all that forward. And at some point, we would be ready for reparations because we would be ready to put them back into our community, to rebuild our community and to rebuild our people and our families. Until we're ready for them, they're not going to come to us. When we, as a people, are ready, it's going to come to us like a flood.
Okay. All right. When we're ready, it's going to come to us like a flood. Okay, I'm for monetary reparations, but everybody that can... from Black America. That's my personal favorite Black American, and that can prove they were ancestors of slaves. But that's my own personal opinion. That's just me.
Right, and I don't disagree with you, and I don't argue with you. I just simply say, when a man is ready for a thing, it makes his appearance. If we don't have it,
yes,
it's because we're ready for it.
Okay. All right. I have less than a minute left. Thank you, Mr. Mario Stephens, for coming on Show Talk with Angela Butler.
It's been my pleasure, Ms. Angela Butler, and as always, thank you. Much love to you, and anytime, feel free to reach out. If there's anything I can help you with, just let me know.
I will. Thank you. Listen, thank you very much, Mr. Stephens. Listeners, this show is sponsored by Doebot & Cowens Mortgage Investments. Listeners, don't forget to contact Doebot & Cowens Mortgage Investments. This company can handle all of your commercial financing needs, so contact them at 678-607-5092 and allow them to handle your commercial finance and tell them that Show Talk with Angela Butler sent you. If you are interested and want to know how to improve your credit, want to establish business credit, call Doebot & Cowens at 678-607-5092. Thank you.